live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Show. We are live Sundays, 11 to 1. And hey, tomorrow I'm filling in for Clark Howard as well, 1 to 3. So I hope you'll join us for that or join me for that. Number today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. And I will pick up the cost of that call. Happy to do that. Online, I've already tweeted out today a little bit about what I want to talk about, which is all about kind of this idea of personal responsibility. We started talking about this on Wednesday when I was filling in for Clark. I was telling you about how Sam is moving out of this condo that we own in downtown Chicago that he uses as his office, and he's used it as his office for the last, I don't know, like 12 or 13 years. And there's just so much stuff. I mean, he's moved a lot of it by hand, and you know how Sam is. You know, if he can move it by himself, he'd rather do that. But there's more, there's things we can't move, like a bed and dressers and all the rest. So he hired some movers, and on Friday afternoon, can you imagine this? The move is supposed to be tomorrow. On Friday afternoon late, because this is how life happens, the movers canceled. They had a medical emergency, and they just had to cancel the whole thing. And the wife of the owner of the company tried to do the right thing. I give her full credit, and she called around to try and find Sam different movers. But it's a really busy moving time, right? I mean, you've got all kinds of things going on, and she only came up with one mover. And this mover has an absolutely dreadful reputation online. And Sam's like, I am just not using them. And then we got stuck. You know how I talked to you on the show about how you get stuck in a place? And we talk a lot about it with the idea of loan modifications getting stuck, or foreclosure, and you're facing foreclosure, or you need to make really tough decisions in your life, and you just kind of get stuck. You get stuck because it's painful and difficult when the universe just doesn't open up and all the answers don't fall down like rain. I mean, it's hard to sometimes get pushed through and get to where you need to go. And so for a couple of hours, we were stuck, just like you get stuck. I mean, everything is sort of organized and planned, and, you know, first it's like, well, could we move later in the week? No, we can't, because we're actually traveling. I'm going to be in Nashville this week after I fill in for Clark. I'm heading to Nashville, where I'm going to be moderating a panel on the economy, which I hope to have great information for you next week on the show. So I couldn't, you know, we can't do it later in the week. Friday, it's halftime at camp. We get to go see our son, Michael. So we couldn't move later in the week. We've got painters and people scheduled to come in and fix the unit up because it's rented as of August 1st. So the countdown has begun, right? We're July 8th, 3 weeks to go to renting. There's just, like, no time. So we're stuck, and we're sitting there and thinking, what the heck are we going to do? And I said, well, what about moving on Sunday? Now, Sunday isn't a day you normally think about moving, right? Because, you know, some buildings don't allow you to move on Sunday. It disturbs the residents who are around and all the rest. And so Sam called the building, and they said, well, you could move on Sunday early in the morning. And then Sam's like, well, who's going to move me? So he called the building engineer, and this is where it makes sense, if you live in a condo building, to be really nice to the people who are on staff. He said, do you happen to have any friends who could help out? And the guy said, you know, I think I do have a few friends who'd be happy to earn a couple $100 on a Sunday. And so I called around. I found a U-Haul rental. You know, I told you on Wednesday how Sam is like a lot like Clark. Like, whatever he can do on his own, he'd rather do. The cost for the U-Haul would be something about $60-$70, including two cart trucks or hand trucks, whatever they call them, and some blankets to move stuff. And we had moving tape that he had bought from packing up the other boxes. So we had a lot of the stuff anyway. And that's what they're doing right now. At this minute, well, not if you're listening Monday morning, but if you're listening right now on Sunday live, Sam and the engineer and two of his buddies are actually moving Sam out of his office, and they're going to come up to the house and move stuff here at the house. They're going to go to the office, the new office, and they're going to move stuff in there. And so you know, it was sort of interesting how once we got unstuck, once we made the decision or thought outside the box, things opened up. So what are, you know, what do you learn from this? The answer is it's easy to get stuck. I get stuck, you get stuck, everybody gets stuck. But you cannot leave your head in the sand. You have to think your way out of it. You have to understand that there is help for you. Whether you're facing foreclosure, you're trying to do a short sale, you're contemplating selling in a sea of foreclosures. I mean, how stuck do you have to get? You stand on your doorstep and you look around and you are facing a neighborhood of foreclosures. I would get stuck. That is so upsetting. I went to see my physical therapist over the weekend, and he told me that he feels stuck. He's stuck because he's trying to sell his mother's house. His parents died in the last year or so, and he's the executor of their estate, and there's just roadblocks everywhere and foreclosures everywhere, and he keeps bringing the price down, and he hasn't found that magic moment where he could sell this house, and he feels stuck. We all get stuck. But the problem is, when you're so stuck, you can't contemplate a way out. Your head is in the sand. You're overwhelmed. You think, woe is me. And you just sit there going, woe is me. Woe is me. Woe is me. And what I'm trying to tell you is you've got to reach out and help yourself. And if you're facing foreclosure or you need help on your mortgage, maybe that means calling the HOPE hotline to actually speak to a HUD-certified housing counselor. Or maybe it means calling your lender. Or maybe it means going into the neighborhood mortgage broker and saying, I want to do a HARP refinance. What can you do to help me? Ask for help. I learned this lesson 15 years ago. My whole life is filled with these kinds of lessons. But 15 years ago when we were doing our renovation of our home, or 13 years ago, and the contractor went belly up right in the middle, which those of you who have been listening to me talk on the radio for that long probably remember those stories. That was a horrific summer of trying to make it all happen. And we got through that, and Sam and I took over as the general contractors, and we thought the guy had basically stolen, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000, and we went back to every single subcontractor and we asked for help. And you know what they all said? Been there, done that, sure, we'll give you a hand. If you don't reach out, if you don't think about ways to help yourself, if you're not motivated to take charge and get your head out of the sand, how is anybody going to help you? The stakes are too high. It's never just about a house. It's never just about your piece of real estate. This is about your life. This is about you taking charge of your life and start taking steps forward, momentum. Moving ahead step by step, understanding that wherever you go, it's better than where you've been. Because it's forward, because it's the future, and because you've taken the responsibility for it, this is your life. 404-872-0750 is our number. Lines are wide open, folks. Happy to talk to you today. Art is on the line with us now. Hey, Art, welcome to the program.
Yes, ma'am. I was calling you in reference to a paving lien that was put on a piece of property that I bought back in 85. And the paving lien was put on in 83. When I closed through a very prominent local attorney here. He gave me a warranty deed.
Mm-hmm.
In 94, I went on to build me a nice house in this nice neighborhood. And the bank financed it for me, did the interim construction loan.
Well, let me just back up and understand. So this is a 1983 paving lien.
Yes.
And did you owe the money on it?
No, not me. The seller.
The seller. You closed on a piece of property that had a lien attached, and that wasn't shed during the closing process?
No, because the attorney prepared the warranty deed in his office, and there wasn't no title policy issued, just a warranty deed.
Okay.
Then later in '94, I built a house, and they gave me a construction binder, and then a title policy when I put it into permanent. I've had two renewals on this piece of property, and last week I was served with papers about the paving lien that was originated in 83. The title company says that there's nothing they can do about it.
There isn't. I mean, first of all, those liens have to be perfected. right, meaning that they have to do something about it, usually in 2 to 3 years. That would be 1986,
right?
Right? That was a really, really, really long time ago.
Right. This is 2012, you know. And
okay, so Art, what have you done to understand, because you sound a little stuck about this, and I'm pretty clear about it, but what have you done to try and get rid of this? Because you must be pretty mad that after all this time, this thing has popped up, right?
I've gone to the title company and I asked them, and I don't think we ever issued you an owner's title policy. We issued a lender's title policy that only protects the lender, not you.
Yes, that's true. You always need an owner's title policy.
I said, but if any time, even if it's a lender's policy, you would have picked up this lien, and I would have known about it a long time ago. And you still didn't pick it up.
So your whole thing right now is you're blaming the title company? I don't think they're not at fault.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
But it doesn't mean that you owe this money for a lien that isn't yours.
Well,
so your mistake was not having your own owner, your own attorney, to represent you and all of your issues when you bought the property, because the attorney would have found this. So that's on you.
Right.
You can't just wait and sit back and expect everybody to feed you information. What they say with buying property is caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Right.
So you're the buyer and you're the owner, and you have to find out, you have the responsibility of finding out every single thing there is to know about this property, and you didn't do that.
Right.
So that's on you. Now you have to take the responsibility again. You have to hire an attorney, and you're going to have to answer this with a response that basically says, you had 2 to 3 years under local law, under state law, to perfect this title, perfect the lien. You didn't do it. Discharge. But you're going to need to hire an attorney to do that. You're going to actually have to take some steps.
Okay.
All right?
So the lien that they put on since 83 can't stay on forever?
No, liens don't stay on forever. They have to be perfected within a certain period of time. I don't know if yours was or not, but regardless, there's also a period of time where they have to collect on it and start collection processes, and I can tell you that it isn't 20 years.
Right, it's got to be 4 or less or something?
It depends on state, where the state is. You know, it's usually 4 to 6. It isn't 19.
Right.
But you are going to have to take charge here. You're going to have to step forward, and you're going to have to make this go away. And blaming the title company just and saying, do it for me, bud, isn't going to be enough here. You're going to have to go and hire a real attorney who understands what the issue is, who can explain your legal options to you, who can go and represent you and tell the company that this is ridiculous, you don't owe this anymore, and they're about 16 years too late.
Okay.
All right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, you go do that, and I'm pretty sure you're going to get the response you're looking for. 19 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glank. We are talking about real estate and money and personal responsibility. 404-872-0750 is our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Stay tuned. I will be back in a flash with more answers to your questions on News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glank. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be filling in for Clark tomorrow as well, 1 to 3. Don't miss it. It's going to be great. 404-872-0750 is our number. There are some lines still open, but we're going to go back to the phones. Linda joins me on the line now from Lawrenceville. Hey, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for you. I recently got married. My husband and I are both in our 60s, and I own a home and he owns a home. We're keeping his home. The properties are 3 miles between each other, which is a good thing.
That's what I call geographically convenient.
Yes, it is.
But especially in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. You know, it could be an hour. It would be awful if we were an hour apart.
Yeah, right, we might never gotten married.
That's right. Never would have met each other.
That's right.
Know? But anyway, we would like to sell my house because of our age factor. We are working so many more years to save towards retirement, and the goal for me would be to sell it if we could, but I'm upside down in it, of course, like most people are. and I'm not sure. We're interviewing real estate agents to find out what they have to offer, how they plan, what their plans are, what they can bring to my table, you know. And I'm not sure. You know, we would consider a lease purchase, maybe, or we could possibly lease for a few years. And the worst case scenario would be a possible short sale, where I'm not comfortable doing that because I obligated myself to the bank. But right now I have a 6% interest rate, and I'm trying to refinance through Chase. And my, you know, I've never missed a payment, but they're just not cooperating with me.
Okay,
and mine is a Ginnie Mae. So
hold on a second. Let's just take a breath here.
Okay. All right.
It sounds like you're frustrated.
Yes.
happily frustrated, right? Because you have a place to live, and that's
right.
Great. And
that's
it
right.
Sounds like you're stuck.
Yes.
Right? We've been talking about being stuck. So real estate agents are only going to tell you that, I mean, you can say that you're seeing what they can bring to the table, but they're only going to be good if you're going to do a short sale.
Okay.
Or if you're going to lease the property. So
right.
That's the last thing you told me in this whole long story.
Okay.
So what do you really want to do here, Linda?
I'd like to sell the property and get out from under it.
Okay.
So I can put the money going into that house into retirement funds, you know.
I think it's a great plan. That means
yeah.
You're doing a short sale.
Okay.
And I want to just say to you something about this whole moral qualm that you seem to have about a short sale.
Okay.
If you have other assets, they're going to come after those assets, or maybe not. But a short, what you obligated yourself to, if you read your loan documents, you obligated yourself to paying back this loan, and if you didn't, you obligated the bank, or you obligated yourself to giving over the house, which was the collateral for the loan.
Okay.
You didn't get married to the bank. You got married to your honey.
That's right.
You are not married to this loan, and it is not till death do you part. It is, there are extraordinary circumstances. Now, that said, if you can afford to pay it off and come to the table with cash, even if it's going to be tough for you, you know, you may end up having to do that.
Right.
But lenders have got, they get compensated in other ways for short sales. They still take a hit, but it's better than you can imagine. And so what I want you to do is make the decision to do the short sale, or
okay.
Make the decision to do a lease. And I don't mean a lease purchase. I mean, you can rent this property out. If you can get a HARP refinance, and I don't know if you can. We didn't talk about that. But you can go to Hope, the Homeowners Hope Hotline, 888-995-HOPE, and figure that out. But you've got to choose whether you're leasing this property or whether you're short selling this property so that you can move on with your life. It's about moving forward. I think it's the theme of the day. 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. I'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkGlink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
July 8th. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for tuning in today on the Elise Glink Show. 404-872-0750. That's our number here at the station. Let's go back to the phones. Janet joins us on the line. Hey, Janet.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Your opening monologue made me think to myself, gosh, you know, she was part of being responsible is being a resourceful person.
Mm-hmm.
And you were resourceful, I mean, by thinking out of the box. And the thing is that if people really stop to take some time to think about either a situation or whatever it is that is at hand, for myself, I've been, I took a buyout from a large newspaper here in Atlanta about 3 years ago, and I've been working pretty steadily, but I haven't had a permanent job because I've had a lot of contract positions.
Pretty hard to find another permanent job in media these days.
Yeah, it is, but I have, in addition to freelancing, I've developed a fairly good little business out of being a personal assistant and sort of a house manager for some people,
mm-hmm.
several different clients. And I basically just took two personality characteristics. I'm extremely honest. I wouldn't steal a match. you know, and I wouldn't look in anybody's stuff or anything like that. And also, I'm extremely dependable. And so the word has started, I just hooked up with somebody just by chance, and they started telling their friends, because their friends were also the type of people who needed those services.
So you're building a business by being resourceful and thinking outside the box.
Right.
And I think that's so great.
It wasn't even any special training I had. It was just two personality traits. You know,
so,
I'm responsible, and I'm honest to, you know, just very, very honest. And,
so let me give you, let me give you a gift back, because you've given a tremendous gift to my listeners today.
Okay.
Here's your gift. And I thought about this morning as I was thinking about my video business that we're launching. It's called Breaking Wave Media. And we have a television studio we're building in our office. And I thought, how am I going to get the word out? And one idea I had is, when you have a business that people really enjoy, there's a company called Angie's List.
Oh, I remember that.
Right? Well, they've become really big. Angie sold it, went public, got like $150 million for herself.
$1 million, yeah.
She did great. But what I'm seeing is that more people are turning to it, not just to find handymen around the house, but all sorts of services. Orthodontia.
Well, that's a good idea to list myself there.
You can't list yourself. You have to
true.
Be listed.
I'll ask.
You have to be listed by somebody who's a member.
Yeah, I'll ask my clients.
So you should ask your clients. It's a great way, if you're providing those kinds of services. Those qualities are rarer than you can imagine. I mean, it's just amazing to me. And so, for being so resourceful and being so thoughtful about it.
What a great idea.
I'm giving this gift to you.
Woohoo! Yeah, I mean, but I'm working on a small patent idea that I really think, I mean, I've asked some of my clients to sign a non-disclosure, and because they're business people, and they've said, oh my God, this is a fabulous idea, and it's something really stupid and simple.
But those are the best mousetraps, right? Those are the mousetraps that people can't always get their minds around, because it's so, so, so simple. In fact, it reminds me of my late stepfather, 20-odd years ago, was a drug inventor. He was a brilliant, brilliant doctor, and he happened to be a pharmacologist, right? Somebody who actually invents drugs. And so one day, his area of expertise was hypertension, but one day he sort of thought in his brain about how nauseous everybody gets when they take cancer drugs. And as a cancer survivor himself, he thought, boy, I wonder if this would work. And he came up with an idea that was so simple, he was sure somebody else had thought of it before, but he did his research, he found that nobody had ever thought of this idea, and so he created it, he patented it, and he sold it to a big drug company. It can be the stupidest, simple thing. And you can take that and make just a ridiculous amount of money. So, Janet, good luck. Don't forget about Angie's List and all the other kinds of websites that are like Angie's List, like viewpoints.com is another one like Angie's List. Anywhere that people go to find help, to solve a problem, to get unstuck, to be resourceful, that's where you want to be listed. Thanks for calling the show. 404-872-0750, 40 minutes past the hour. Let's continue on with our calls. John joins us on the line. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you, Elise? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, I'm doing great. What's going on today?
Well, just a simple question. About 2009, we finished paying off the mortgage on our house.
Woohoo!
And, yes, very good. And we have never received any notice or anything from the mortgage company that our mortgage, of course, has been paid, etc. And recently, there was an article in the Journal Constitution about obtaining a quitclaim deed from the original mortgager stating that, yes, your house is paid for. Is there a problem with that? Or
I can't imagine a lender is going to give you a quitclaim deed. That isn't how they operate.
Okay.
But you can get a discharge of the mortgage. And it basically takes the mortgage lien off of your property.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be so satisfying if on the day of the last payment, the lenders would sort of stick something in the mail to you that you could frame and says, hey, your mortgage is all paid off. Congratulations. But I have to tell you, in another story out of Atlanta that just absolutely turned my stomach this week, a guy who had paid off his house was foreclosed on.
Oh, my goodness.
By one of the big lenders. So it would be really nice to go back to the lender and say, here's this piece of paper you sent me saying this was all paid off. But it's a release of mortgage is what you're really looking for. So I don't know what was in the AJC, and I don't know who was saying that, but lenders don't do quick claim deeds, to the best of my knowledge. But they do do a release of mortgage lien, and that's what you should be looking for. First, go and see if it's actually been done, because you may be able to just check on your title and see what's going on and if that lien has been released. And if not, then that's how you would approach your lender.
Very good. Thank you, Elise.
You're very welcome. Thanks for listening to the show, John. 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open, folks. Paul joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Happy Sunday. What's going on today?
Thank you. Well, my question is very similar to the one you just had for John, I think. It's a good problem. I'm paying off my mortgage in a month or two, and I didn't know exactly what I'd be looking for from the lender and what I'd need to take to the county or state to, you know, to record that there was no lien remaining on the home and so forth.
Since you haven't paid it off yet, first of all, let me ask you, how long was your mortgage?
It was a 15-year, and we paid it off in 9.5.
Awesome. And how did you do that?
We just paid extra on it when we first we converted it from a 30 back in 2003. And since the rate was so good back then, it was 4 5/8, which was incredible at that time. We lowered the payment somewhat. The overall payment raised, but it was low enough that we could still pay extra on it. And I just, you know, rounded it up to the next $100, you know, from what the payment was. And then when I got a raise, I added another $100 to it and so forth. And
so how does it make you feel being this close? Because you must see your statement come in and go, oh, my God, I could write a check today.
I can write a check today, and the only thing that's stopping me from doing that is knowing what to expect and what to look for, and that's my fault.
Well, it is so exciting. You've got to be so excited to just kind of look at this thing and go, I am done, because there's such a feeling of accomplishment when you pay off the single biggest loan you're ever going to have in your life.
That's right, and I retired in April, and so this comes at the right time as well.
Sure, you want to free up all that cash flow. So again, as I said to John, it's not like lenders send you a framed picture with, I wish they did. It would be so cool if you got like a little frame certificate that said, you've paid off your mortgage. Congratulations.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's just not going to happen. So you also are going to look for a release of the lien. And so what you'll want to do is make sure that you should get a statement from them that shows a zero balance.
Okay.
Keep that. That's helpful. And then if everything's working the right way, they should release the lien on your loan. It won't happen instantaneously, but it will happen over a couple of months. If it doesn't, you can call them back and find out what process your lender has in place to make sure the release of lien has been put through. Because what you don't want to do is let this, you know, kind of go, well, I made these last two payments and then stick your head in the sand, and 5 years later you try to sell the house and you realize the lien wasn't released and it's a big hassle.
Exactly. Right.
So being proactive, being responsible, I love those themes for today. It seems like they're every single call is about that. You know, what you want to do is make sure in a couple of more months after you finish paying off this loan, you get the zero balance, make sure the lien has been released.
Okay. And I'd work with the bank to either get a piece of paper from them stating that, or...
Well, the release of lien, you might get a piece of paper, or what you'll do is just look up the record of title. Right, you can go to the property records office, the recorder's recorder of deeds office. That's where the liens get filed.
Okay.
There should be a release of lien there. And if there isn't one, and it doesn't happen instantaneously, so be prepared. It takes a little bit of time. But once you've called the lender to make sure they received the last payment, that it's been applied correctly, you should get a balance statement from them showing zero, and then you can move on and get the release of lien.
Okay, I think that's what I was looking for, whether I had to take that release of lien to the county.
No. It should happen sort of automatically.
Okay.
But it may not, so that's why you're going to check on it. And you wouldn't necessarily get a piece of paper that's a lien, you know, a release of the lien.
Okay.
So it doesn't come to you. So I want you to, that's why you're going to have to proactively follow up on it.
Okay, yeah, and that's exactly what I was looking for. That's exactly what my question was. I would have expected a piece of paper that I would need to take down to the county and say, here's my release of lien, and I need clear title.
Yeah, they're not going to do that with from you, right? Because you could have faked that document.
Okay.
I mean, I know you didn't, but they don't know. I mean, you can create anything on Photoshop today.
Sure.
But the lender is supposed to talk to the recorder of deed, and that's supposed to happen anytime you pay off a loan. That's what happens. Now, if you're paying it off in a refinance, right? When you refinance your loan, and that the first loan gets paid off, and the second one takes its place, and that happens sort of automatically in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I always just expected that the bank was taking care of that because they were taking care of their interest, so they wanted it recorded. But in this case, I'm the only one with interest left.
Correct, but it should still happen the same way. It happens that way, you know, for millions of people every year when they pay off their loans. And you never, when you pay off in a refinance, you don't get a piece of paper that says your lien has been released.
That's right. Yep. You're right.
You don't ever see any of that. And yet deeds are, you know, liens are released all day long. So what you need to do, if in a couple of months it hasn't happened, call your lender. What's the process of doing it? What's your timetable for doing it? And just follow up, because when you follow up, it means you're taking control, you're taking the right steps, you're making it happen. And I'm sure, Paul, that you are going to sleep so much better the minute that thing is released.
I sleep better now.
Just knowing it's coming.
That is that close, yeah.
I think it's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great Sunday. 49 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Hey, did I tell you about Twitter? So tweeting during the show has already started. I'm talking about personal responsibility and notes. Would love for you to join me online. This is where I'm tweeting out websites and phone numbers. You are missing half the conversation, maybe even more if you're not on Twitter. So I am at Glink, the at sign, G-L-I-N-K. If you hit my website instead, thinklink.com, all you have to do is click on the Twitter button. It'll take you right there. Sign up, follow me, get all the information, get the conversations, figure out what we're doing online all through Twitter, join the Twitter community. And again, we're tweeting online during the show. It's half the fun. You don't want to miss out. All right, 404-872-0750 is our number. Lines are open. Give us a call. We've got so much more to do today, and I'm going to be back tomorrow as well, 1 to 3, filling in for Clark. The fun continues on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, 54 minutes past the hour. I'm in this blank. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Coming up just after the news, we have a special guest who's going to join us from a new HGTV show about foreclosures. This guy is one of the big foreclosure buyers in the country, and we're going to find out exactly what he thinks about buying foreclosures these days. I think it'll be really, really helpful. Ted joins us on the line now from Jefferson. Hey, Ted, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hi, Elise. I have a question for you.
All right. Hopefully I have an answer for you.
Okay, I own a house. Technically, it's a rental house, but I don't get any rent on it because my daughter lives in it.
Okay. You're treating it as an official rental house?
Well, I get taxed and insured as a rental house.
Okay.
But anyway, the title is free and clear. It's paid off, but the title is in my name, and I would like to get my wife's name added to it so that if I should die before her, she would get the house without any interference from probate and things like that.
So I'm missing something. Is the wife the mother of your daughter?
Yes.
Okay. So you want your wife to, your daughter's living there, you want your wife to get the property, and is she going to then allow the daughter to continue to live there?
Yes.
Okay. So there are
the
two.
The deed is in my name only.
Okay.
And I would just like to add my wife's name to it, so we would be like joint tenants with right of survivorship, I think is the term.
That is indeed. So there are a couple of things that you can do.
Okay.
One, the easiest thing to do is to add her with a quitclaim deed.
Okay.
And you can probably prepare this yourself, or you can hire an attorney to make sure it's really done right. And basically what you're doing is you're basically putting the house from just your name into your name and your wife's name as joint tenants with rights of survivorship, which is what you want.
Correct.
The other thing that you might want to think about doing is putting the rental property in a trust. And I assume, I don't know how many children you have, but I assume you want your daughter to continue living there.
Yes.
You can put as a requirement of the trust, she would, I assume, ultimately be a beneficiary of it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe other children as well, or maybe this is just for her. And she's ultimately there, and so you can put that as a requirement of the trust. And that would get the property out of your estate at what I assume is probably a pretty low purchase price or current valuation price, and then, you know, basically move on from there. So there's a bunch of different ways you can do it. What you need to do, Ted, is you need to talk to an estate attorney who can help you choose the very best way and make sure that this is done. And if it's just this one question, quitclaim deed is probably the fastest and easiest and cheapest way to do it. But if you've got other assets and other things going on, you're going to want to think it through just a bit more carefully. 404-872-0750. Emily Sklink. Be back in a moment on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It is 7 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Glad you could join me today. We have a really cool thing we're going to do in just a minute. I want to tell you that it's all about foreclosures this hour. So how to buy them, how to sell them, how to think about it, how to understand where the value is. Because as I've continued to say, has never been a better time to buy a foreclosure than now. In fact, in some areas, I wonder if we're not even getting past it just a little bit. We're investigating, and we're going to do a report for CBS News Money Watch coming up in the next, I don't know, week or two, where we're looking at foreclosures in different price points in different areas and trying to figure out, you know, where the value really is for you, so you can see that. But there are people out there who are making a very nice living, thank you very much, on doing foreclosures. And so there's a new show coming on the air on Discovery Channel called Property Wars. And rival bidders are facing off in Phoenix, Arizona. And this was taped. It's not current. It's not taped live. You know, it was taped 6 months, maybe even a year ago. We'll find out in just a moment. But the show airs. It premieres Thursday, July 12th. At 10 p.m. Eastern on Discovery, and it's all about who's going to wind up with a bargain, who's going to get sucked into a money pit, and reality television at its best, a lot of it's all probably pretty tricked out. Anyway, we have Doug Hopkins with us. Doug has a company called Posted Properties. They buy about 150 foreclosures a month. I mean, amazing. And he does it all in the Arizona foreclosure market, and he's made as much as $2.5 million on a foreclosure. He tries to get 30% to 40% profit per sale. And I wanted Doug to come on the air today to talk a little bit with us about how he does it. So, Doug, you there?
Yes, I sure am. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you.
So talk a little bit about, I think this whole idea of doing, you know, there's so many reality shows about buying property out there. I think it's great. Tell me a little bit about how you got started in real estate.
Gotcha. I was licensed in 94, and I was a regular real estate salesperson. And in 1999, I went down to my first foreclosure auction with a friend. I had no idea what it was all about. But when I walked in there, I left after about 45 minutes. Made a phone call to my dad and said, "Dad, my life just changed."
Really? What struck you when you were standing there?
I could not believe the prices that the houses were selling for. And, you know, stuff that I was looking at all day long for, you know, that was worth $120,000 was going for, you know, $80,000, $85,000. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Why aren't more people doing this? And the thing about it was back in 99, it was just, a lot of people didn't have the information on the foreclosures, and now it's a lot more readily available than it has been ever, and that's why we see a heck of a lot more people down at the auctions. It's a lot more competitive than it was back in the 90s and early 2000s.
Of course, 2 years ago, you could have bought any property you basically wanted in Arizona because
Absolutely.
There were so many of them, and they were just like littering the ground. For $1,500, you could buy a house.
I wish I could go back in time and buy them all.
I'm sure you do, but 150 houses a month is still not a small number.
Yeah, and that's not all me. You know, I have a bidding service. It's postedproperties.com, like you said, and we represent a lot of buyers, and we'll go ahead and bid on their behalf. And we do that here in Arizona and also in Southern California. And we're actually going to be making our way back down to your parts in Atlanta here in the next few months.
Oh, well, we have plenty of foreclosures that could be bought as well.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, there's a lot. And don't forget about the entire state of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
There's plenty up there as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the things that really strikes me about foreclosures and how people feel when they go to these things, I mean, auctions are just there, I think, to make you get so worked up emotionally that you pay more than you should.
And that happens, especially when you're bidding against some people that you don't like.
and
in the show,
and you're like, I'm going to show you. I'm going to take that. Property wars, of course. It's, you know. So this property wars series that starts. When did you guys shoot this? About a year ago?
No, we actually did it in February and March of this year.
Okay, so still not. I mean, it's still about 4 or 5 months ago when it starts to air.
Sure.
Little bit out. So, what was the market like back in Arizona in February and March? Because it looked pretty. It looked like maybe things were starting to move a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, things. The first part of the year is when we saw quite a shift, and a lot more people started buying. A lot of the new institutions, the big institutions and hedge funds now are buying and holding, and you know, they have billions of dollars. They're coming in and buying up the market right now, especially here in Arizona and also down your way, and so we're competing with that now as well. But you know, it's
that's got to be kind of tough. I mean, you got to feel like, oh well, I invented this market. Look what these guys are doing now. They're outgunning me. These billionaires, you know, like go mess with the presidential election. Leave my little corner of the world alone.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just got to adapt. It's all about adapting, and you know, we've seen quite an increase in prices because of it. You know, because the inventory now is starting to shorten up a little bit. So when the cash flows aren't as attractive to the funds, they're going to stop buying here, and it'll go back to fixing and flipping guys. And
oh, good, and then the bubble can start all over again.
That exactly.
Do you find, Doug, do you ever think about the families that have been displaced? I mean, every single one of those foreclosures was lived in by a family that ran into hard times and got dumped out of their house so that you can make a profit. Ever think about that?
I do, and it's that is something we buy mostly homes out here that are vacant and normally don't have to deal with that side of it.
But wait a second, they're vacant because the people got tossed out.
That
they don't live there anymore.
Yeah, they either got tossed out or left or you know what have you. What we do is I also own a company called Red Brick Realty, and we're solution-based as far as that goes. If there is somebody in there, if they need help, we have a property management business here too, and we try to find a place for them to live and or do some sort of rent back, because we have a lot of buy and hold investors as well. We try to make it as easy as possible if there is somebody in there. And
but it's pretty sad.
It is. It absolutely is. And you hear some stories, and that just, you know, tears your heartstrings. And so that's the part of the business that I hate. But it's, you know, it's a reality of what's happening. I can't control that. But you know, it does. It hurts. It hurts sometimes. You hear some of these stories, and you just, your heart goes out to them. I try to help as much as possible and make it as easy as possible for the people that are in there. I always wind up buying, moving trucks or, you know, helping them out and giving cash for keys or something like that.
just to try and make it a little bit easier.
Exactly, and they appreciate that.
I hear compassion in your voice, Doug. It's
absolutely,
and it's so important as we're building, and I'm all about building real estate empires. I think there's nothing better than building a real estate empire, but you're building it on the backs of the misfortune of millions that has come before you.
Yeah,
you can't forget. You can't forget, or you forget to be humble, I think, a little bit. My problem with the billionaires at the hedge funds who are doing this is I'm not quite sure what conscience exists in there, and I feel like real estate is a little bit more of a different kind of an investment, so I always try to remember people who have come before.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more.
So tell me why you're doing this show, because I got to say, I mean, reality shows are very entertaining, but that's because they don't make the people who are in them look very good usually.
Yeah, that actually was a huge concern going into this.
Yeah.
I just figured I'm going to be myself, and I can't control, you know, how it gets edited or whatever. But
what was the benefit to you to being on the show?
They contacted me. We had a little clip on YouTube about what we did, and that's how I got contacted out of it. And I just decided, you know, heck, this is a good way to get my name out there and get recognized for what we do every day. And a lot of the stuff that you'll see is exactly the way it happens every day for the most part. And it's just an exciting thing that we do. Taking the personal thing out of it, as far as most of the houses, like I said, what we bid on are vacant. Taking that into consideration, we're out there looking at the property, same people every day, and it's like legalized gambling, and we're going in and trying to figure out a price for the house. What do we think we could sell for it, and what's the top bid that we can possibly pay for it and still make a decent profit?
Yeah, I like the idea of your profit, 30-40% per sale.
Well, I don't.
That's a decent profit.
Yeah, we don't make that anymore. Back in the day, we were making that. Yeah, yeah. It's gotten a lot tighter. So,
okay.
We're lucky to make 10% now.
Okay.
There'll be a few of them that will make more, and a few of them that will make less, depending on the inside. A lot of it depends on what the condition of the home.
What are we not seeing on the show? Because as a person who's been in television for a very long time, I know that producers create the world they want you to experience as a viewer, but there is so much more that goes on behind the scenes. So what are we not seeing? What are the lessons that people need to learn here?
You know, what you're not seeing is the people that go down and think they can do it on their own, that don't do the research and wind up buying houses that they're buying second loans and thinking they're first, and wind up thinking they bought a house for $50,000 that's worth $200,000, and they don't realize that there's $300,000 first in front of it, and they're upside down, immediately going in. That happens all the time.
Wow.
People doing that. And another thing you don't see is the people that I have working for me. You know, it's not just me. There's 20 people, that are looking through every single house, making sure title's clear, driving the properties. If I can't get to it, they're driving the properties. I have bidders at all sorts of different auctions because there's 6-7 auctions going on all at the same time, and so I have bidders everywhere and running around, and it's craziness every day. It's a controlled chaos, basically, is what it is.
It sounds like some days it's probably not that controlled.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because that's how chaos is, right? By definition, it is out of control. But it sounds like you've built a really interesting business, and it sounds like there's some growth potential for you, which is interesting. There's always another property to go on. What is, you said you're down to 10% profit. When does that change for you? When you get to 5%, you give up, throw it all up, and say, I'm moving out?
Well, no, I'm never going to move out. I'll always figure out a way to make it work. I mean, even in 2005, when we saw a similar growth, where it's going up 5-7% a month, which is what we're seeing here in Phoenix.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
We still found a way to make it, and you look at short sales, because short sales are a lot. They've become a lot hotter ticket now, because the banks are now actually working with the homeowners in saving their houses or doing short.
Yeah,
sales.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure to keep people in their houses for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yep.
For sure.
And the banks have really stepped up in that regard.
Well, that's good to hear, because some days they do and some days they don't.
Yeah,
I would love to see them do it more often.
Correct. I do too. You know, I, I have a lot of friends in the same boat and a lot of people that I know, and it's a mixed bag. Some people have a lot of success, and the banks are real, you know, work with them, and they're very diligent. And then other times they can't get anyone to answer the phone and deal with 17 different people on the phone. So it's a mixed bag of the reaction that I hear.
Well, I really appreciate you coming online. The new Discovery Channel series is called Property Wars. It premieres Thursday, July 12th at 10 p.m. I'm going to tweet out the YouTube little clip that they sent out. Doug Hopkins' company is called PostedProperties.com. Doug, can people find you on Twitter as well?
No, I'm not on Twitter.
I need to do that, though.
Can't imagine why not. Well, I'm sure you have a website, postedproperties.com?
Correct, yes.
All right, so folks can find you there as well. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with the show. 21 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. I'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. 404-872-0750. Thanks for joining us today. Karen joins us on the line now from Kennesaw. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
I've had a situation for a couple of years that I've lost sleep over, so I'm hoping to get an answer from you today. I had a roof put on my house January of 2010.
Okay.
In April of 2010, I got a letter called a Materialman's and Mechanics Claim of Lien.
Mm-hmm.
And because my roofer, this is due to my roofer going out of business, and when he went out of business, he didn't pay my dumpster company.
Okay.
You know, the dumpster that goes in your driveway and takes
Yeah, that would be the subcontractor.
Right. So, in time, I asked some questions of some friends of mine. One
That's a little dangerous, by the way.
Right.
Unless they actually really know something, like they're real estate lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you ask questions of friends, they can share experiences, but I'm not quite sure how much knowledge they have.
Right.
So what happened when you asked them questions?
One friend does work in a real estate office, and she did ask some questions in her real estate office, and the answer to this was, if it's a materialman's lien no suit has been filed, it will expire in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if the claimant failed to file a suit to enforce it, they cannot renew it.
So we talked about this earlier in the show, about having to perfect liens.
Right.
And if you don't perfect liens, they drop off. So what is your question for me? Because it sounds like you've already had some answers.
Well, I did get that answer, but what I did do after getting that response from a real estate friend of mine was I actually called the owner of the dumpster company because I didn't like this lien on my home at all. And just out of principle, I wanted it gone because I didn't want to hold up on my refi if I wanted to refi in the future or when I closed on the home when I sold it.
Mm-hmm. How much was the lien for? A few hundred bucks?
$355.
Doesn't seem like a whole lot of money.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't seem like a whole lot of money
to
be losing lots and lots of sleep over.
I know. Well, I talked to the owner of the dumpster company, and I expressed that I was concerned about this and that I realized that we've both really...
Karen, I'm going to have to ask you cut to the chase because we're running out of time.
Okay. She would not negotiate with me.
Uh-huh.
And she claims that the lien was perfected but will not be released until paid and negotiated. So I'm kind of unclear as to whether, is this lien still in my home? It's been 2 years.
Go look and see. You can go look up the title to your property at the uh-huh. local recorder of deeds office and see what liens are actually attached to it. And you should do that as part of any research that you're doing. Go see what they've actually done. If they have perfected the lien, if they've actually done what they need to do, you probably will have to pay it either now or when you sell the house. But it's $355. And while, you know, you have already paid that to the guy who went out of business, they're still owed the money. They never got paid. And ultimately, you're responsible for that. So if they haven't perfected it, it will evaporate in a poof of smoke. If you want to sleep at night, pay the $355 and be done with it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Be back in a flash on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, and you're listening to The Elise Glink Show. We're live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Hey, and tomorrow I'm filling in for Clark Howard, 1 to 3, here on News Talk WSB. You will not want to miss this. We're going to continue this conversation about responsibility and taking positive steps, moving forward, while still paying homage to the past. There's no way that you can get out of moving ahead without letting go of the past. I want you to be able to do both. If you're not following me on Twitter, there's a very interesting interaction going on right now about a couple of show listeners are asking whether they should go to foreclosure auctions. So they were listening to Doug Hopkins from the new Discovery show, Property Wars, talk about going to foreclosure auctions or buying through MLS. There are other opportunities to do this, right? Foreclosure auctions, I think you should just go and watch what happens, right? To borrow the Bravo thing, right? Watch what happens. It is absolute madness, and it's such an interesting way. It sort of helps you think about value. You can go to some of these houses that they're going to be selling, take a look at them, even without having any intention to buy. Don't even go to buy. Go to learn. If you don't learn, and if you don't open your mind to different ways of doing business, you're never going to grow. So go to these foreclosure auctions and learn. Go to HUDHomestore.com. Talk to a realtor who specializes in foreclosures and short sales, who understands the neighborhoods you're interested in. All of these things, it's never an either or. If you think it's an either or, it means you're stuck and you're not really thinking through all of the different possibilities. You have to open your mind. You have to think about what is it's going to take to get you to the place that you want to go. Can't just be about problem solution, this or that. It could be this and that, and a few other things as well. So we're having this conversation on Twitter. Like I said at the beginning of the show, if you're not following me on Twitter, you're missing at least half the conversation. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K on Twitter. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. There's still a few minutes left in the show. If you want to ask me a question today, I'm happy to do that. Ben joins us on the line from Cleveland. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I'm up in Cleveland, Georgia, and I outright own my property. I outright just bought it before I even moved in.
All right, you bought it free and clear. You don't owe anything on it. Got it. What's your question?
Exactly. And I put some money into it, put liner in the pool, got it working, neighborhood kids got into the, you know, the chlorine tabs, threw them in the bottom of the pool, bleached it out a little bit.
Nice.
Got a shed. I'm pretty much kind of not getting along with the youngins around here. And
it sounds like they're torturing you, Ben.
Pretty much.
Did you not give out good Halloween candy?
I didn't give out any. They can get their own.
I see. Okay.
That's where I'm at right now.
I understand. So have you been to talk to their parents about their behavior?
Not doing any good.
Okay. So what are you going to do? Just throw up your hands and sell the property? Because if you don't like your neighbors and you don't like living there and the kids are torturing you and you don't feel like calling the cops, which you could do, and then put a stop to it. Call the cops? Have you done it?
It's not doing any good.
Not doing any good. Okay, so you there are other options you can take, but if the cops aren't willing to step in, the parents aren't willing to control their kids, and there's no other way to make it work, I think you should sell this house and get out.
What would short sales do for my profit margin? It'd pretty much kill it, right?
Well, short sale is irrelevant to your situation, Ben, because you don't have a mortgage. And a short sale is when you sell the house for less than you owe. And you just started the show. You started this by telling me you own it free and clear. So there is no mortgage, right?
Right.
So short sale is not the right word. So if you paid $200,000 for the house and today it's worth $100,000, and you paid the cash for it, you're going to lose $100,000. But that doesn't mean that there's a short sale. That just means you're selling it for less than you paid for it.
Okay. How should I go on this?
I think you should sell the house because you're clearly miserable in living there. The question that you have is selling the house and losing $100,000 the right way to go about it? Or should you turn this house into a rental property for a while, and then when you sell it, you get a loss on the investment? And that may be...
Rentals up here, usually the people that you rent to will help finish, destroy the rest of the property.
Fine. Then just dump this property, Ben. You're unhappy living there. The neighborhood kids are tormenting you. Their parents are being irresponsible, and they're not controlling their children. I assume you've asked in a nice way over and over again. The police have abdicated their responsibility, and they're not going to go after the kids. And so nobody's helping you. Nobody's helping you be a good neighbor and stay in this property. Nobody wants to work with you. Get out. They don't want you in this neighborhood, clearly, for whatever reason. And why would you want to live in a place where you're tormented and nobody wants to be your neighbor? It sounds like a miserable situation for everybody. So you own this property. You put money into it. You're going to lose money when you leave, but that could be the case 5 years from now, too. So why waste another 5 years of your life being tortured in a neighborhood that you don't want to be in, and they clearly don't want you? Sell this house, take the loss, move on with your life. 404-872-0750 is our number. Jeff joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
No, not much. I just refinanced my home for 3.49%, and I typically pay an extra $1,000 a month, or did before.
How much was the loan for?
$450,000.
Okay, and you're paying an extra grand?
Well, before I was paying an extra $1,500, but now I'm only paying $1,000. So should I keep doing that or just...
Well, I don't understand. Okay, so did you refinance from like a 30-year to a 15-year?
Yeah, 30-year to a 15-year.
Great. Okay, so now you've got a higher payment, and you're still making an extra $1,000 a month.
Right.
So I think you're probably going to get this loan. I mean, what a loan, right? 3.49%. The other day I said to Sam, I just want to take out like a $1 million loan at 2.78%. I want it to never end. So
yes, sir.
The concept is, you know, what's going on with this? Well, if you're making an extra, how much is your regular monthly payment?
$3,700.
So you're basically making an extra three payments a year.
Right.
And that means you're going to pay off a 15-year loan in around 11 or 12 years. So what does that do for you to pay it off in 11 or 12 years?
Nothing really, I guess.
And how does it make you feel? Because we had a couple of people call in today at the beginning of the show where paying off this loan, their house loan, was like the greatest thing since sliced bread. How would paying that off make you feel?
That would be great, but it's not going to pay that. The interest is not that high, so... I mean, the total interest is only like $118,000 or $120,000 or something that you're paying.
Yeah, it's almost free money at this point.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So
where are you stuck? You sound stuck.
Well, I'm stuck on whether I should or shouldn't.
Okay, do you have something better to do with the $1,000 a month?
I can just put it in the bank, I guess.
And earn zero on it.
Right.
So at least if you prepay the loan, you're earning 3.5% on every dollar you prepay.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I
feel like you should pay with intention, though, right? You're paying, like, because you can't think of anything better to do, right?
Right.
And I believe in doing investments with intention, understanding what you're doing and having the intention to make something happen. It doesn't always work out the way we plan, but you shouldn't just pay it because you don't have any better ideas. You should pay it because it's the best idea. And if it isn't the best idea, you got to think outside the box, do some research, and think about what would be better. And it may be that $12,000 a year, which is the amount you're prepaying, maybe you have a family and that would pay for a family vacation home somewhere that your family would get together at for weekends and in the summer, and maybe you're going to do something that's going to be a memory building occasion, whether it's buying a vacation house or it's taking your family on vacation once a year, an extended trip to, you know, children, grandchildren if you have them. Maybe you're going to do that with your money, and that's a better use of it than just saving 3 years of payments.
Well, this is already my retirement home, so and I'm already living on the lake. So.
All right, but there's other. But what I'm trying to get at, Jeff, is I'm trying to get at intention. The intention of doing something with your money that's bigger and better, that will either be a better investment or take it out of the realm of investment altogether. That's just a smarter, better use. Like,
okay.
So I want you to think about this and start to write down some ideas on where you could put this money. I mean, maybe there's a different kind of investment. Maybe if you have grown children and you've got grandchildren and the children are doing fine, but they could use a little help for college tuition money, maybe it's a gift to your children's children for 529 plans every year. And you just get that money out of your estate. Maybe you're doing something else with it. Because it doesn't sound to me like, even though you're retired and you're living on the lake, it doesn't sound to me like you need to pay off this loan quickly.
No.
So if you don't need to, now you get the privilege of asking bigger questions and having bigger conversations about what you really want to do that's going to be meaningful for you in your retirement. Maybe this $12,000 is money for you to go and treat yourself and your spouse and whoever it is to go someplace you've always wanted to go in the world and just never did it for yourself. I don't know the answer because I'm not you, but I can tell you that my mother has started to do something really interesting with her money. And my mother doesn't have a mortgage anymore, and she's looking to get some assets out of her estate. And so this year, she, out of the blue, at a dinner at my sister's house, just sort of your random Friday night, she pulls out an envelope with a very nice check to each of us. And she said, this is money that I want you to spend by the end of the year on something that you would have never spent it on in your entire lives. So it can't be anything you've planned for. It can't be anything that you're doing. I want this to be something unique and special. My mother is trying to redefine what memorable gift giving is. And she wants to live vicariously through these trips. We have to account for the money we're spending. We have to, you know, share in the joy. We have to take a lot of pictures and document it.
Mm-hmm.
But she is trying to give us new memories and allow us to do something that we would never, ever, ever do in our own lives, or maybe not for another 10 or 15 years after the kids are educated and all the rest. And it's so interesting to see what each of us is choosing to do and how we're choosing to use that money. There may be some lesson in there for you, Jeff.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
Let me know what you decide to do. I think everybody would really like to hear it. It's 49 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenn Show. Our number, 404-872-0750. We are happy to take your calls here. I am delighted to help you out if I can. Don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So ever since the Supreme Court came down with that landmark health care decision, the AJC has been following it, and in today's paper, there's a special report that examines what hospitals get out of expanded Medicaid. And the Medicaid situation and also the exchanges, the insurance exchanges that are required to be in place by 2014, with just a very few exceptions, those are the crucial next pieces that have to be figured out of this whole healthcare puzzle. AJC's on it. Pick it up. Go online. Take a look and read. 49 minutes past the hour. I'm Elyse Glenn, 404-872-0750. Don't forget, I'll be filling in for Clark tomorrow, and I'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
I don't know if you've been following what's been going on with the LIBOR rate. That's the London Interbank Bank rate, LIB, interbank offered rate. And that's the interest rate that a lot of your loans are actually tied to. And what's happened in the last couple of weeks is it's come out that Barclays Bank, which is London-based, has been manipulating, may have been, I think they actually have been, manipulating the interest rate for their own benefit. And I'm going to talk more about this when I'm filling in for Clark tomorrow at 1, but this idea that there is a public trust in the banking system in this world, the financial system and the way it operates, and if we as the public cannot trust the bankers are at least playing with a level playing field, that they are not, with inside information, manipulating the LIBOR rate for their own benefit, screwing you, the customer, and screwing all of their other customers, That's going to be a huge problem. That will be a violation of public trust unlike any we've seen before. And I have to tell you, in the last 5-6 years, I have been flabbergasted by the level of public trust that has just been thrown to the wind all in the name of the almighty profit buck. It's just not going to work this time. You cannot violate trust over and over again in an institutional level and not have it affect public trust in a way that will forever change how we work with the banking system. You cannot do it. And so tomorrow on the Clark Howard Show, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this and how it's just appalling, the ramifications of the fact that Barclays has accepted a $450+ million fine and the chairman and a bunch of other people have resigned. Even the slightest perception of impropriety in this matter is unacceptable, and we should all be outraged. And why the United States government hasn't taken a deeper look, why they aren't suspecting that this might be happening, you can only say it's a complete failure to protect the public trust. And if there is no public trust, the system isn't going to work. More tomorrow. 404-872-0750. Beth joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Beth.
Hey.
I just have a minute. How can I help you?
I have parents that are 80 and 82. They own a condo. There's three daughters, my two sisters and myself. We want to make things, we're planner aheaders sometimes.
Love that.
We're trying to make things easier for them, for if one of them passes away. We thought about, do we put the name of the condo?
Let me stop you right there, because this is like the number one question I get asked is, should my parents give us a gift of a house now while they're alive? Is it better to get it as a gift, or is it better to get it inherited? And the answer, Beth, is it's better for you to inherit it. So if you want to do something, put the house in a trust that names the three of you as beneficiaries. Make sure your parents' will is in order. Make sure that they've got living wills. Make sure that you understand what their intentions are and that somebody has been named as the power of attorney for health care and financial matters. Those are the crucial steps that you have to take if you want to make it easy for them and easy for you. If you do that, when the dreadful day comes and they're no longer with you, at least you won't have to worry about paperwork. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's 58 minutes past the hour. I'll be back tomorrow with Clark, 1 o'clock, on News Talk WSB. Have a great Sunday.